Saeed.
And Melanie.
Oh my God.
We are back.
We're back with another great episode.
Yes, of two writers.
Talking shit.
Yes, and who do we have today?
Oh my God, we've got an incredible guest today to us courtesy of a previous guest, fan favorite, Roxy Shee.
Yes.
We have incredible literary agent, Haley Mariner from Independent Artist Group, also known as IAG. Welcome to the pod!
Thanks. Thank you, guys.
So we're going to dive right on in with these technical questions. You're actually the first agent we've had on the pod. We've had like multiple managers, but the literary agent's a little harder to come by.
The nice ones.
Yeah, exactly. The ones who want to talk to us on mic. So how would you define the difference between a literary manager and a literary agent?
Good question.
Great question. And I feel like I get that all the time. Honestly, it's changed so much. I think so from when I first decided I was going to be an agent. I think so when you strip it down, it's more so like the agent is there to help you get the jobs. Mm-hmm. Like they are looking for the jobs and the opportunities out there. They're covering the town. They're calling people saying, hey, what do you got? Do you need writers? Do you need directors? Versus I think more the manager is like, they help develop. So it's like, okay, let's go back and forth on scripts. Let's get those ready to take out to the town. What are you excited about? What do you want to do this? But I think nowadays too, even with that, managers and agents, the lines have kind of blurred. One, because a lot of agents became managers. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Some managers have a little bit more agent kind of style, but also like for me, for instance, I feel like I have more of a managerial style where I do like to know like, hey, what are you working on? Because mm-hmm. like, I don't want someone to work on something that maybe there's something already out there and you're just like, don't waste your time writing that versus, mm-hmm. or being able to know like, hey, you should really dive into that piece of work or talking about where do you see yourself in the next 2 or 3 years? Because I think the job market is a lot smaller. So you just have to be very like careful with how you place things. But I would say the biggest difference is agents usually help get the job. And also they're allowed to negotiate by law because like we're franchised by the government to be able to like actually help negotiate jobs versus managers are not technically allowed to. But again, they can't help you meeting someone and someone wanting to give you a job. It's like how everyone gets their jobs here. Everyone knows someone who knows someone and it lands it.
How do you and where do you usually get clients from?
I mean, when I first started out, it was a lot of like pitch fest competitions. Okay. Nichols, all that stuff. And then soon it became like just building a relationship with managers and getting a lot in from my manager friends. Even prior to that, I used to just like see movies I would like watch and literally go through like an IMDb pro like rabbit hole of us like, oh, I wonder what this person worked on. Oh, what else did they work on? Oh, let me see this producer. Oh, this producer did this thing. And then like, I'll come across a movie that I'm like, this sounds really cool. And I'm like, oh, this director is not rep. Let me just watch the movie. And I'm like, oh, I like that. And then I'll find a way to contact the director. So I've definitely done that. Like one of my clients, it was an animation movie out of Saudi Arabia. That's my mom's side of the family is from there. And so I was like, oh, wow, this is like the first one. I was like, I got to meet this person. And again, that movie they were working on for like 3 or 4 years. Like I think I was even like an intern at the Hollywood Reporter when I remember seeing a sign for it. So like, and then as years went by and I was like, I wonder what ever happened to that movie. But now it feels like a lot more in terms of clients come through like either client recommendations or managers sending my way.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Okay, so for the relationship between you and the manager, so let's say, for instance, Haley, you're my agent, a girl can dream, you know, and this manager wants to sign me, you don't have a relationship with them. Like, can you kind of talk about like the agent-manager relationship and how you work either together or don't work together on your client?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that chemistry is just as big as the client to rep relationship. Because if we're not working together, if we don't feel like we're in sync, I do think clients actually suffer from that a lot more. So if you approach, you're like, yo, I met this one manager, I really liked them. My first instinct is like, hey, introduce me to them. Cause I would prefer to have a chance to at least talk to them on the phone and kind of get to know their personality and be like, hey, like what type of, like, again, kind of vibing with them to see like, what type of manager are you? Are you the type that loves to do generals? Are you the type that loves to just develop? Are you someone who wants to produce a little bit as well? Like understanding kind of how they function as a manager. And then it can help me figure out, okay, how is our relationship going to be? Because I think so with some of my manager counterparts, some love sending general meetings. So I was like, okay, if you want to go ahead and do that all the time, which it can be exhausting, I think, for any client to do like general, so many generals. Obviously, it's very exciting because you're meeting a lot of people, but it is exhausting. And I'm like, you'll do the generals then, and then I will make sure to go through that and say, okay, where are the jobs with those people? So I'll be like, hey, go talk to this person about this job. So it makes it very kind of like, I have that information, so we kind of balance each other. I think so in the past, I've had some managers I've worked with where you feel like you're competing against them for your client's attention, for your client's time. You're like, how many meetings can I set? I'm setting them out more, like blah, blah, blah. And you feel like there's, and I was like, I don't like that competition. Like I have some of that competition with my, with managers. I do rep with some of my clients, but it's like in a fun way. We're like, how many people can we send the script out to? Oh, I'm going to be you. Like,
it's like
but
a it's, joke.
Yeah. But it's like, it's such a competitive way that it's pushing the client up versus feeling like we're being pinned against each other.
Yeah.
Cause I think so everyone brings something different to the relationship. And I think again, everyone has their own relationships. Like, again, I have a lot, like as an agency and an agent, I have a lot more information about the jobs out there. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to hold that against my managers and be like, why don't you know that information? Right. It's like, no, but they, again, they can help structure the story you guys are working on and saying, hey, I know this one place is really looking for this. This is how we can shape this pitch. I'm going to trust them on that because they work in the nitty gritty of the development. That's not like, yes, I'll read draft after draft of stuff, but I was like, that's still not my forte. Mm-hmm. And I prefer not to have to do that all the time. After seven drafts, I'm like, honestly, it makes sense why with development execs, I'm like, oh, I can see why things come out like crap after a while. It's like, you're sitting there in your mind with the same thing. So I'm like, let me read a fresh pair of eyes. Let me see this without anyone else really like, no other interference, I guess, in that way. But yeah, with the manager, I think what I would prefer is at least being having the chance to sit down and chat to them, whether it's a phone call or a quick coffee, just to kind of get a sense to be like, okay, like, how's this going to work? It's not going to be something where also I've seen managers, they'll come into someone's life and then they'll make them not be happy with the agency.
Right.
And then try to be like, okay, because I want to pull you and take you to someone else instead. And so it's a lot of trust between the two of them. Mm-hmm. It's like, when I put clients with managers, I also hope that they were going to protect me from other agents trying to swoop in and take them. And some don't. I mean, it's tough because you're trying to play this line where you want to make sure your client's happy. But I think most of us, and at least what I say is just like your manager agent relationships, like clients will come and go for us, but that relationship is like, I will always remember. So if like, if someone tried to screw me as a manager, I'm like, I'm going to remember that more than the client. Cause like, again, the client, I was like, if they go somewhere else, I hope to God they do really well. And if that wasn't a fit, it's whatever. But I was like, I'm going to remember that you pulled something. Like, it's like my trust with you is gone.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to put anyone else with you. I'm not going to recommend you. So it can get kind of lethal in that way.
Yeah.
That makes sense. You briefly said you interned at the Hollywood Reporter.
Yes.
And so my question is, how did you get from there to, hey, like, we need this story.
As everyone says, on the dark stormy night. I don't know what type of like, so I was born and raised in Indiana, went to school in Chicago, and like how I got. And again, I swear.
Hold on, what part of Indiana? Because I got family from Indianapolis.
Wait, really? Shit,
yeah.
Where at?
Fuck, I gotta find out. But yeah, like my mom's side of her family is all from Indianapolis.
Oh my gosh.
Like my mom went to like, they like, always talk about Ball State or Indiana or
Ball State.
That's all I hear from them. But side note, we're gonna figure this out.
Okay. Yeah, no, I love when other people are from Indianapolis. Yeah. Like randomly, I met a manager who went to my rival high school and we were both like, wait, what? And like all of us are like, client's team were all like people of color, and we're all from Indiana. We turned to him, we're like, we swear there's not this many people of color in Indiana. You just happen to grab like at least three of us. It's weird. I always love finding that out. I went to school in Chicago, and while I was in school, I was like, I'm going to be a director. I want to be Spielberg. Nice. I want to be the first black woman to win an Academy Award. Mm-hmm. Took a directing class and I was like, I fucking hate this. Instantly. I was like, I'm done with this. I do not want to do this. So I was like taking a whole bunch of kind of random classes, trying to figure it out because I knew I wanted to be in this business. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up finding myself actually from there taking a job at the Film Commission in Chicago. And then I got a job at The Onion as an office PA.
Oh, funny.
And I loved working in an office. Like I would still do some set PA every so often. And I just hated getting up at like 4 a.m. to get somewhere. I'm like, I really have to do this versus like, okay, just come in at like 12 into the office and scan all this paperwork and make sure the money is right. And I'm like, I can do that. That's easy for my brain to know what to do.
Yeah.
But I think as I was doing that, I got introduced, like we used to have, so we just did like a whole bunch of random commercials, like Rum Chata and all this shit, stuff. I was like, this is shit. And then stuff came in. I didn't know what I was going to say. I'm like, crap, can I curse?
It's called Two Writers Talking Shit.
So. Yeah, oh yeah. That's
where it was.
Oh, thank God. And I remember when one day I was on set and the buyers, like the people who are part of Rum Chata, they came in for like a couple hours, watched and then they head out. And I was like, who are they? Like, who would they be on a big film? Mm-hmm. And one of my colleagues was like, oh, that's like a studio exec. So I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to set out to do. And so I found this internship program, and I don't know if it still goes on. It's called Creative Mind Group, where you can intern at different film festivals. And so I applied for the Cannes Film Festival, hoping that I can get a job at a Paramount or Universal to hopefully help me get a job afterwards. So I was like, okay, I can work my way up. I was like, I want to be Donna Langley. Like, that's what I'm going to do. And they partnered me with a film sales company. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck that is. And for people listening, that's just, it's basically an agent, but you're selling films. You're not, okay. Instead of selling scripts. So yeah. Completed films to distributors around the world. It's a very fun job. It's like you just meet all these people from all over and you talk about your love for films and the different size movies that get made. So when I moved to LA, I worked and interned for them. And then when I was looking for my next job, like I did like a temp job. So I guess it wasn't really an internship. It was a temp job. Mm-hmm. And I remember like the posting was like, need someone to help from November, blah, 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 to another thing, 2 weeks with the, and I was like, oh, I know that's AFM. Cause we used to do that all the time in sales. Mm-hmm. So I applied and then I found out it was a Hollywood Reporter, and literally, luckily I got the job. It was great. All I did was like, stand there in the booth and make sure people didn't sit on our couch. Like that's literally was my job most of the day. And like, I actually made a lot of friends from it. Like, that's, remember, there was a German distributor who always showed up and he would always sit down and he always tried to bring me candy to be like, hey, is it okay if I sit? And I was like, no, you can't. They're interviewing right now. You can't do this. Da, da, da. And then one day I was like, sit. I don't care. I was like, but don't sit too long. Cause it's like, also it's like, they're all standing around trying to wait for their next meeting. And so like, hey, I would do that too. I would try to sit here just quickly, just for 5 minutes, rest your legs. So that's how I got there. And then I met a couple other friends through that who worked in sales. So again, it was a very natural position. And so when I finished that temp job, I was like, okay, what the fuck am I going to do? And then an old internship boss of mine, I had interned as well at a law firm. And she was like, hey, I have a client who's looking for an assistant at his sales company. Do you want to apply for it? I was like, hell yeah. I was like, I need a job. So I applied for that and then interviewed, thought it went really well. Didn't hear back from them. And I was like, okay, well, new year, new me type of thing. maybe I would say a week or so later after that, I got a call. They're like, hey, are you still available? I'm like, yes. So I come in for interviews, all this stuff. At that moment, I probably should have saw all the red flags of this job. But I think for me, I was like, you are poor. You are living in K-Town in a studio with your best friend. Like, you need money. I was like, you need to make sure you can cover rent and not ask your parents for money for that, which I hated asking them for. I was like, only if I truly need it, guys. I ended up working at a small sales company that did a lot of domestic, like documentary sales for things. So that was like my first job into the business, and it was super toxic. Unfortunately, my boss was... it's a little crazy, for sure. But I think he was very intense. And I think he was treated like that when he was an assistant. And it was something that, like, kick the dog syndrome type of thing. It carried on. And so everyone there who worked for him was very much like that too. So it was a very, like, I think I was like, I got this. I can stay positive. No, like maybe a week and a half, I was like, eventually, like, they started screaming at me all the time for nothing. And I'm just like, it's not an environment someone should be in. Nobody should want to. And I remember some of the assistants were like, oh yeah, I used to cry every day. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be fine. And then eventually it's like every day I was crying because I was trying to, like, not even make them like me, but I was just like, how do I get through this without letting them see me crack? And my dad was like, they feel very like military style. They were trying to like break you down to build you up. And he's like, that's weird. Mm-hmm. Like, and I was like, I guess. It's like, so eventually I quit that. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back to the studio world. I'm going to become Donna Langley. And I met a studio exec through a mutual friend who was working at that studio. And she was like, you should go work at an agency. She's like, I never did that. So I'm advising you. I think you should do that because you can see everything from the ground up. I shrugged my shoulders. I was like, okay, sure. I needed a job. So I applied to all the agencies. I remember I read the mailroom book and I was like, I'm going to call, and I called WME's HR, and I was like, hi, my name is Haley Mariner. I'm looking for a job. I have this experience. Like, because of course, in that book, they said they did that, yeah, and then they got the job. They're like, come on in for an interview. So I was like, I'm going to try it. That fucking backfired so quickly, and it does not work, people. They were like, okay, here's our email address to send us your resume, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, that's a disappointment. So I did not get the job. But then, formerly APA, I reached out, interviewed, came in, and next thing I knew, I was working in unscripted TV. Shit. Was the first department. I was in the mailroom for about 2 days, which is a record, I think, for most people.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's fast.
I think people usually spend a year.
Yeah, at least a year. Right? I also got there and I was like, I got to get the fuck out of this room. I still remember like second day I called my dad and I was like, my dad's the calm one out of my mom. She'd be like, you should like stand up to patriarchy. I was like, nah, my dad's like, this is how, like, if you calm it down this way, you handle it this. Very strategic in that way. And I was like, yeah, I cannot stand this. So the first desk that opened up, and I liked unscripted shows and I loved game shows. So I was like, okay, I can like find my way into this. I still remember, like, I interviewed with these two agents and I mixed their names up in the interview because I didn't know anyone's name still. And I remember looking at them and they're like, yeah, I'm so-and-so, I'm so-and-so. And I was like, oh, well, that's the charm in me. And I was like, that's also my, and I was like, that's also my weakness is names. So you can see how it works out here. And yeah, I worked for them for maybe about 9 months. But in that 9 months, I actually really enjoyed what they did as agents. I think so. One did a lot more creative, like worked with producers to help their packages and stuff, which I know is a bad word now. And the other one helped staff, like showrunners on these shows. And you can tell they genuinely liked the job. And I loved talking to their clients. It's like when they're on the other line and like, I still need to talk to them, I can just like spend time being like, hey, how's this? How's your kids? How's this? Oh, I remember you said you were doing this thing. Like, what else are you working on? And like building that relationship with them. And, but I knew unscripted wasn't the space I wanted to be in. I was like, as much as I loved game, again, mainly game shows, like, yes, I watch the Kardashians. Vanderpump was my favorite show and is still my favorite show.
Season 11 is going to come out.
I know. And they should be winning the Emmy this year. I'm sorry. Like, they
never
should.
Seen this show, but
oh my God, I'll dive into pure it at some point. Gold. I can do a whole podcast about it. Sign me up. And I think with that, so I was like, but I think I still was enjoying the idea of being an agent. And then I think I realized that being a sales agent and a literary agent or just an agent at agency is the same thing. Mm. It's like you're selling, you're still selling, but it just changes on the thing you're selling. And so I ended up meeting 7 years ago now an agent at AFM where I was working at the Hollywood Reporter, but at a party he worked at my company and he was like, hey, I'm a lit agent. And he's like, you work at a company? Cause we had like four different buildings. So I didn't see that side of the building. I was like, no. But he was like, oh, you want to be an agent? I was like, yes. He's like, you want to work in film? And I was like, yes. He's like, come on by. I was like, I'll tell you about my job. And ever since then, it's kind of like, I've stuck to it, moved over to work for him after that. And then
interesting.
Yeah. And started just growing into the agent I am now. And he like really took me under his wing. He was a great mentor for sure. Still is, but he's leaving me. So I'm sad.
That's a beautiful story.
Oh,
so
nice.
How long have you been at the agency formerly known as APA?
7 years now.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess 7.5 years maybe now. Yeah. It's a long time. I've never been at a job this long ever.
Boy,
I'm still young, guys. Yeah, this voice, I know it gives age, but I'm very young. No, I'm kidding.
So what are you looking for when you sign a writer?
I mean, I think before, I feel like it's changed even now, but before it was just like, I just want to like the writing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always still going to be the thing. I just want to like the writing. I want to be able to read through it and just like it zips for me. I understand kind of their voice. It stands out in a way that my brain can just understand it very well. Or it's a weird thing to say because it's like it just clicks. It's like you read this and you're like, I understand exactly what this is trying to say. This is what it's trying to do. I hear the way the comedy beats or the thriller beats or something hit in a way. So that's always a big part for me. It's just like, I just have to love it because it's hard to sell something when you don't like it. And I think executives and people, they can hear that in your voice when you're like, hey, I have this thing. It's like, it's kind of cool. And they're like, they're not excited to read it then either. Versus you're like, yo, I have this new script. It's so cool. It's so freaking weird. And you try to explain to them and they're like, yeah, send it over. Like, this sounds really cool. So definitely the voice on the page is very important to me. Obviously I think after that, when I meet the person, it's like the personality, just to see if we vibe. Cause I think there's a lot of people you can vibe with initially, but it's also understanding like how you are, what are you like when you're stressed? Mm-hmm. Because I think so that's something, and I feel like that's something I'm learning now. It's kind of like being in a relationship in that way. I'm just like, what do you like when you're stressed? What do you like when you're in your head about all the things you're working on? What do you like about this? And also what your work ethic is. Mm-hmm. I think some folks are like, yeah, I have this one script and I just want like, this is the thing I've been working on for the past 3 or 4 years. And I think this is going to be the thing that's going to get me into everything versus a client who's like, yeah, I have this one, but I'm also working on this other thing. I'm thinking about this other job, like idea. But I'm trying to figure out what's the next one to work on. Mm-hmm. Or yeah. So I think, and like my brain literally fired on like, what are all the things? So I think now as an agent, what I look for is obviously taste in the script. Very important for me is the work ethic. It's just like, are you hustling for yourself as well? Because mm-hmm. like, again, my job is to hopefully open these doors for you to meet people mm-hmm. And to expose your material to people. But like you yourself have to still sell yourself in the room. I cannot get you that job. I can position you for the job, but like you yourself still have to win the job. You have to trust those executives to be like, hey, I'm the right person for this. No matter how hard I pitch, even if that executive is my best friend, I can't force someone to be if they don't feel like it's a right person. Mm-hmm. And someone who I think they hustle for themselves. And it's weird to say, it's like, I think some people think that as just writing all the time. And it's not necessarily that, because that's a very hard thing to do. It's like some people I know can naturally crank out like 6-7 scripts a year, and that's just them. But not everyone can do that. So I never expect that from people, I think. So it's just the idea of like, okay, I'm trying this thing, I'm working on this, or I'm going to work on the sample that hopefully kind of fills a lot of different plates so I can submit it to different things, or I'm working with a writer's group for this thing, or I'm going to this networking event and I met this person. They seem really cool. Can you make an official intro for us mm-hmm, with, mm-hmm. to sit down? I'm like, yeah, let's do that. So just seeing that they're putting themselves out there as well, because I think coming out of the strike, the jobs are going to be a lot tougher. And I think so you can see some people are like, so where's the job? Where's the job? But at the same yeah. time, I'm like, you're not doing anything to help yourself either. You're just relying on me. Mm-hmm. I was like, I know somebody was telling me a statistics about some writer's room recently where it was like 700 submissions mm-hmm. Were taken in and only 20 meetings mm-hmm. happened. Wow. And out of those 20 meetings, only 3 people got the job. So it's like, you see the competition. So it's like, I want my clients to be those 11 people who I don't know who's, obviously, again, taste is going to be a thing that helps in this town, but there's this passion behind it where they're motivated. I guess that's the word more so yeah. than anything. They're motivated to also fight for their career, mm-hmm. not just, I'm going to sit here and I have the project I've been having for the past 2 years and nothing's really happened with it, but I'm still expecting you to do that. And I'm like, no, give me something else that can go get you the other jobs. But this one will be the baby that we'll work on because it's a smaller feature or something like that.
Yeah, you bring up which was going to be our next question, which is like, you talk about work ethic and then also the idea of not just like writing tons of shit just to be writing shit, being more calculated about it. But how much work do you look for from your feature writer and your TV writer during a year? What do you think is a good amount? Because you did say like, if they didn't write shit that year, you'd be like, oh, where were you this year? Like, what's going on? But like, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think for like my TV writers, so I'll sign some of like TV writers with my colleagues and they get staffed in a room. And mm-hmm. that room is very demanding. It takes a lot of time. So, and they're like, I want to write a feature, but they haven't had the chance.
Yeah.
I don't hold it against them because it's like, okay, you've been working this whole time, so that's fine. I think, so yeah, if you're working in a room or you have an assignment that you're working on, I think, and then you haven't had a chance to write a new script, I think that's okay because mm-hmm. you were actively working. But when you're not, it's nice to know like, what are you thinking about the next thing? Mm-hmm. Even if it's not fully completed, because again, the people who can turn out 5-6 scripts, not all those are good.
Yeah.
It's like maybe one is, or maybe one has the potential. And they have to also be aware of that, saying, hey, I wrote these 5 scripts. Which one do you feel like is heading in the right direction that I should maybe put more of my energy into? And you're like, hey, out of that one, this is the one that feels more like it. It has more commercial sensibility. Mm-hmm. It feels like something audiences want right now. This one, it feels too indie unless you're going to direct it, which they're not a director. So you're like, let's not worry about that right now.
Yeah.
So my expectations of it depend on where they're at. But I still hope that even with the clients who are consistently working, just be like, oh, I've always wanted to write this project. Like they're still thinking about things they want to do for themselves. Mm-hmm. Because when they do have that downtime, in between jobs potentially, or they wrap something up and the next one we don't have lined up for them. It's like, you know what? I'm going to go write that. Yeah. It's kind of like sometimes just getting my clients who are directors, like getting them back behind the camera. It's just, just to continue to use that wheel. Cause it's like, if you're sitting too long, then you come back, you're like, oh, it takes a second to get back into it. Yeah. But now I can't remember.
That makes full sense. I mean, cause you attacked it on the feature and TV side, but like, yeah, I'm in that situation now where like, I'm like, man, I need a new comedy sample and I need a new drama sample. And so like, now I'm like, okay, now I got to write. Cause I've been stuck in development, not stuck. It's a blessing, but I've been developing for the past year and a half, and in development, it's not a lot of writing of scripts. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of writing pitches and pitch decks.
Which is hard too.
Yeah, because it's a whole nother side of the mind, which I found hard for me being a writer that like came out of fellowships and shit and just writing all the time to like, no, we're going to write a character doc. And then we're going to write the theme section. And then we're going to write... you know, the conflict, and then we're gonna do, and it's just like, God damn, I just wanna open a fucking writing doc and write, fade in. Like, you know, so
final draft.
Yeah, exactly.
So for me, it is, you do have to get back to writing your craft. And I do think, even, which I wanna ask you too, just about the industry, is like, I do feel like since there's less shows, the idea just like going from room to room and like not creating shit, I think is over. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like, you know, I was on a show on Showtime called Flatbush Misdemeanors, got an episode, and then it got canceled the next season. So it's like, ideally, like if it was 15 years ago, that show would go on for like 8 or 9 years and I would just be moving up. Mm-hmm. But it's like, now you got to start over. The reset is more, you know, the reset and find a new job is more prevalent now.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that moving forward? Do you think with the industry after the strike?
Yeah. I mean, I think definitely, I think in all sense for both writers and reps and stuff, I feel like it puts so much pressure on everyone to feel like, how do I stand out amongst everyone? How do I combat this thing? How do I make sure I'm the one getting the job and not someone else is getting the job? I do think it's like people are not going to be able to jump from job to job. I think so. Some higher level writers probably, because they're like, okay, you're tried and true. But I think it's like, it's going to suffer for people who are coming up, for sure. I think so. It's like going to be a lot harder because it's like developing. They're like, oh, you're not high enough level, so we're not going to pay you yet, but we're going to have you do all this free work to maybe see if a show goes through or not. And then again, then you're like, okay, well, I'm doing all this for free. And then at the same time, I want to get staffed, but then I need to go probably do a regular job to make sure I'm supporting myself until I get staffed. So I think so there's that pressure that's really going to build up on a lot of people. And I think for me as a rep coming out of the strike, to see the competition that it is, it makes me nervous because it's like you look at your roster and you're like, okay, I'm trying to get jobs for all these people. And there's part of you knowing like, not all these people are going to get jobs. Or even thinking about just the bigger issue of just writers in general, like, and half the writers in this business probably won't be working for a year at least. And the reality in terms of paid jobs, again, developing things like everyone's always developing, hopefully. Even if you're just sitting there lying in bed thinking about it, you're still developing. You're still developing.
That's why I keep telling myself.
Stay in development. Under those covers.
Yeah. It's that actually so sounds warm. So nice. Yeah. Ooh, I want to develop. Waste my time to shine. But yeah, I think so. Like, it honestly makes me very nervous because it's just like, the competition is going to be stiff. You have to then find like, okay, how, as a TV writer, you're like, how do I stand out amongst everyone else? Without also changing who you are as a writer, without being like, okay, let me write something like this because that'll help me get that job. But it's like, but that's not something you want to do. So it's like, okay, where do I stick my guns to it? And then again, for me as an agent, it's just like, basically it's like, where are all the jobs? But where do you find the things that show that you still care about your client? You're still looking out for them. So I think it's hard to, for both, again, for both writers and reps to be able to justify sometimes the job at hand because you're not seeing the results, even though you're putting all this time and energy into it. You're putting all this free time and energy into it. And so you're just like, it hasn't manifested into anything yet. But the strike sucked for sure.
Oh, it super sucked. But I do feel like, just to sum it up, kind of like, you can only control what you can control, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, for me, that's one of the things that I learned this year is just like, I didn't know how long this fucking strike was going to be. My reps were like, oh, it'll be 2 months. And that shit was fucking 5 months.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? And I couldn't write. I was depressed and shit.
Yeah.
And you're on the picket line. And now I got to worry about shit like sunscreen that I never worried about. Like all this shit. But yeah, no, I feel like now I'm just like, I can only control what I can control, which is I can write that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can turn in that thing. You mm-hmm. can send out that thing. I can, at that point, it's up to the ethos or whatever the hell. And then if there's a meeting, I just show up and put my best foot forward and something will happen at some point.
You're absolutely right. It's like, we can't control any of this. And I think for so long, even during this strike, like I thought I could control myself to stay busy. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm gonna plan this thing. I'm gonna do all this stuff. And I almost like burned myself out back in June. It's like, because like I went on vacation prior to that, because I always go on vacation in May, and people thought I was going because they thought the strike. They're like, you knew the strike was gonna happen. I was like, no, I literally, for the past 7 years, I've always gone on vacation in May. I was like, that has not changed and will never change.
Yeah.
And I came back and I was like, okay, I'm going to stay busy. I'm going to do this. Da, da. And then like, I found myself just burnt out. I'm like, how did I burn myself out when I'm literally doing nothing right now? And it's because, and then I think I finally realized, it's like, yeah, I can't control any of this. This is not in my hands. I do not have that. So the only thing I can control is just getting to the end of this.
Yeah.
It's like in my mental health. And so I think that is something that everyone has to remember. And I think that's the best way to think about it as a writer is like, I cannot control what other people think of my writing. I can only control what I'm writing and what I'm putting out there. So I'm just going to focus on that. And I think that's when you notice good things start coming, the jobs start coming in, because you're putting your patience with it versus going in also very like desperate. Mm-hmm. And I think you've probably ran into people who are like, please, please. Da, da, da. You're like, ooh, that energy. No,
they don't want that.
Yeah. And I was like, we don't need that. It's like, you can't help it.
Yeah.
You've been looking for a job for, it's like
hungry.
Anyone. Yeah. It's, you're hungry. It's like, you've been looking for a job for like, been out of work for 5 months and finally a job's coming up to you and you don't want to fuck it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that desperation comes out and everyone's like, ooh, but you're like, the reality is like that's how everyone is. Some people are better at covering it up than others. Mm-hmm. Which is good on them.
Yeah.
So
speaking of things falling apart during the strike, I think, you know, a lot of writers, and I'm sure like many of your clients, have had projects that are kind of like set up in different stages, right? That have like fully fallen apart or are in the process of falling apart over mm-hmm. the last 5 months. Like I know for me personally, I mean, even just like the loss of momentum, because momentum I do feel is like everything when you're a creative in this industry. So that just coming to a standstill, it's like, it's so hard to like work that back up in what feels like an extremely stagnant like environment right now. But so like, just to give an example, I had a TV show that I was pitching. This production company wanted to move forward with that, like, you know, whatever that looks like. And then during the strike, they declared bankruptcy and then they shut down. Right.
Oh,
so shit. It's like, that's, but you know, so for your clients who are kind of like in that position, like how are things going to move forward for them? And by them, I mean me.
Crystal ball.
First, I feel that real hard because mm-hmm. I think so. You see that and you're just like, fuck. Like, honestly, it hurts a lot to see, especially it's just like, you had people who really liked it. And you're like, okay, we're all excited about this. And again, you couldn't control the fact that they filed for bankruptcy and shut down, which is like fucking terrible shit. And now my cursing's out. Sorry, mom. No, I'm kidding. I curse just as much around her and she hates it. I mean, I think with that strategy, like my strategy for something like that, where I was like, okay, the place we were going to that kind of fell through. It's kind of re-strategizing. It's like the plan we were doing before where you're meeting certain people, it's like, let's continue to do that and find that person who's passionate about it, because I think it's still going to be led by passion. And I think it used to always be people like, well, it's this company. This company's big. They do this thing. You're like, yeah, that's great. But if they're not passionate about it just because you like their name, don't just don't force yourself to work with them because they have that name. It's like producers, as much as I love some of them, they also are, they're playing a numbers game still. It's like they're trying to develop as much as possible because for them, they get paid when things go into production.
Yeah.
And they don't know when that's going to happen. So if you're just seeing someone who's like, yeah, because they just see it as an easy sell, I think so, versus someone who really is going to invest their time, I think so. It's just like going back out to market and saying, okay, who is still there? Who survived the strike in terms of executives, in terms of producers, in terms of companies, and reassessing. It's like, okay, let's treat this as a basically a new environment. So like, yes, whatever happened prior to May 2023 happened, but we're in a completely new environment. Let's just take this out as if it's a new thing. And I think kind of treating it in that way helps because, I mean, the issue is the studios don't know what the hell they're doing. Buyers don't know what they want. I think they're still chasing moments versus like, hey, what do we like? Let's create the things that are going to be great versus let me chase what has been working. Like, right. Hearing everyone now being like, we want Suits because Suits did so well
on Netflix. First off, let's take a Suits tangent. Yeah. Like, I watched that show like 10 years ago before Meghan Markle became Meghan Markle with Dude. And I was like, oh, she's a dope little actress. And I used to watch that show. And then all of a sudden, I remember it's like trending. And I'm like, what? Why the fuck are people talking about Suits all these years later? And it was because Netflix had put it up. And like it took off, which I think is gonna be the new model. Like keeping a show in one place doesn't really make sense anymore monetarily. Mm-hmm. So I think in the future, that kind of showed like it had a life in USA, right? Mm-hmm. And it did. It was a successful show. It had fucking 10 seasons.
Yeah.
Move it to Netflix, whole nother audience.
Mm-hmm.
And like a fucking TikTok song. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it's back. So.
Exactly, which totally reminds me of that. Whatchamacallit? His the TikTok song. What is his name? Sure Thing, Miguel.
Oh yeah, Miguel.
I didn't know that song was like out before. I remember hanging out with my friends. I was like, "Guy, you just heard this new Miguel song? Like, damn, this is so good." I had one friend's like, "Haley, that came out like 2000 what? Like 7, 8 or something." Exactly. I was like, "Wait, what?" And then I looked, and I was like, "God, I'm like, I'm one of those people just thinking it's something new."
Wait, no, I also did the Paperclip.
I think it was called Sure Thing. It was Miguel. It was called Sure Thing. No, Paperclip. Okay.
I was like, what's Paperclip? No,
I don't know if he had a song called Paperclip.
Isn't there a lyric about a paperclip?
Oh, in the song?
Oh, in the song,
like
yeah.
Fan, like a paperclip?
Yeah. There's a lyric in it, yeah.
Wow, that's the lyric you got in there was Paperclip?
That's, yeah.
To the audience out there.
That's
sorry,
really.
Sorry, Miguel. The only thing she remembers from your hit record is Paperclip.
That's genius.
You know the Paperclip song.
Paperclip song. That's what happens on TikTok. It becomes the Paperclip song.
It becomes the Paperclip song.
Sure Thing. Yeah.
It's just like Suits took off, and now you have everyone like, we want to find our Suits. Or obviously, Barbie did well this summer. I was like, we want to find our Barbie. And like, you didn't even know Barbie was going to become Barbie or the way it is. You didn't know Suits was going to take off the way it is. I think so. There's a nostalgia with both of those. Mm. And if you really break it down, like, Suits hasn't been on for a while. So if some people are like, oh, I used to watch this, there's a comfort level. Mm-hmm. So it's like, clearly there's a comfort thing where people just like to see reruns of stuff.
Yeah.
Like I watch a lot of shows that I've seen on reruns. Like that's why Friends took off again, because it was like reruns.
Seinfeld.
Yeah. It's like, that wasn't because it's like, oh, we want new shows like this. We like that version, but still provide new things. And I think so that's what I loved about when streaming first started coming out. It was creating a lot of cool new shows. Yeah. And I think they're hoping to hit that mark where they can have 10 seasons of something again. And I was like, I just don't think that's where we're at. I think so we're kind of going into like that British model with like shows that have like 6 episodes, 7 episodes, and then you move on.
Yeah.
And I don't think they want that, obviously, because there's like, there's no money in that. And you're like, it's art. Sometimes there's not money in everything. Sometimes it just impacts audiences that hopefully will get like, a part of me is just like the TV model, the 6 episodes is like, you use that to build a superstar so you can bring people to theaters. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I think you have to look at it differently.
That's a dope way of looking at it. Yeah, because you look at, I was telling somebody this yesterday, look at one of my favorite shows of all time, Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
That broke 3 fucking stars. Mm-hmm. Zazie Beetz, fucking Lakeith Stanfield, and Paperboy. I forgot, Brian Tyree.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Childish Gambino was kind of known. Mm-hmm. If you watch Community, you remember him, but it also took him to another height. Mm-hmm. So that's like 4 actors
exactly
in there that springboard. Zazie Beetz is like all in Marvel and dead, you know, yeah. Lakeith becomes all these other shows.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're right. It could be a platform to springboard, because they say now, you know, there are no more movie stars and all
exactly.
this bullshit.
Like the ones that are still the ones who are blockbuster people come in are all the people from the early 2000s.
Tom Cruise and all. Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, Tom Cruise is saving the theaters.
I
mean,
Denzel, I just fucking watched Equalizer 12 because of, you know what I'm saying? Like, because Denzel's in it. You know what I mean?
Like, but it's like, where are those people at now? And I think.
It's a good point.
They're
I like
so,
that idea.
They're so focused on the whole idea of, well, we need to replicate the show so we can get that same thing. And I'm like, I don't think so. It's just create something new, go with your gut of like, this seems cool. I don't think you need to spend $100 million on something. I think you got to be smarter with your money. But what is, like, tell that to a billionaire. Like, hey,
right.
You don't know how to spend your money too well. Well, let me do it for you. Like, I can do something on a budget. Trust me. Try me. I mean, but this is also why I'm not a producer. I'm like, imagine all the people involved and you have to try to also be cognizant of it. But, yeah, I mean, I think with that, but to come back to your, I was like, what are we doing? Come back to your question. I mean, I think so. It's very much coming out of the strike. It's looking at this as a new market, saying, okay, it's like still getting a sense of like where people are leaning. Cause you don't want to, like I will say, like right now, people do not want dramas, at least on the feature side. And it used to be like, oh, send us your dramas. We'll still read it because everybody will always find their one thing they want to do. But ultimately now people, you can tell, are resistant to even reading it. They're like, like maybe not even send it to me. Like I want to justify my job, but like I can't do anything with this. So don't send it. Instead, send me all your genre stuff. Send me all the things that are comedy. Send me all the things that can bring an audience to it. Versus like people don't want dramas right now. And I was like, you're right. I think so. Every so often they'll still come through, but they're not the things that people are craving. I think people are just craving escapism.
Makes sense.
People are leaning into it. And I think the same thing with TV. Everyone's wanting escapism again. There's certain dramas that we'll all still watch because those have been on air. But you see that resistance and that. But I think other than that, I'm treating it as like a new market of like, let's go out to some new people. Let's use this as a new time to introduce you to people. Some execs have left. Some new ones came in. We can reintroduce you to some of the same places, and maybe that place will be like, yo, let's do this. And you're like, this is what happens when you get new execs.
Yeah, for real.
So something new comes.
Let's bring it, like Mel always says, this is getting dark, right?
Oh.
So let's bring it out into the happiness, the joy.
Yeah.
One thing I do, whenever things scale down, opportunity arises, right? And so I will say, do you feel like the ability to make like proof of concepts or short films? So for example, they don't want dramas? Fine. If somebody makes an amazing short that's about two people in their relationship and it does well and then blah, blah, blah. Or, okay, fine. You don't no longer want to make, now you only want to make hard comedy. So you don't want to do Atlanta no more. So then somebody might go make a short that's very Atlanta-ish or like the Bel Air trailer.
Yeah.
Do you think because it's shrinking, right? And you do have to maneuver in that shrinking space to play in the system. Do you think it will open up opportunities for people to create their own material? And do you endorse that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely endorsing it, I think, because the shrinking is not for our control. It's the people at the top who have the money. So they're going to try to determine what's hot, what's not. But I think still the art drives this business. If something cool cuts through, whether you just do it yourself, again, like the Bel Air, I remember when that trailer came out, everybody was talking about it. Everyone was like, oh my God, and obviously it turns into the show it is. But I think it's a time, like, I mean, I've told this to clients, it's like, they're like, oh, what should I be writing? What is the market looking for? What is this? I'm like, what are you the most passionate about outside of a drama? Because I'm like, let's.
No, that's why you're here though.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, unless you have this like this epic drama you've been holding in your freaking heart for so long that you're like, I need to just write this and get this out of my system. I'll be like, go fucking write it. Because like, then you're gonna be distracted by that this whole time. Like I had a client who, I remember kept chatting about writing this one project. I was like, I want to just write this. And like, it was during like the ATA time. So they weren't my client even at that time, but they're like, well, I want to do this. I was like, you talk about this all the time. Why don't you go write it? It sounds like you need to go write this out of your system first before you even tried anything else, because you keep coming back to this project. And they wrote it, and it's an amazing script. We took it out, set it up. Got on the blacklist. Like, oh, it's something where I'm like, see, so clearly the passion comes through. So I think I'm still always advising that. It's like, if someone's like, I want to create something like Lantis kind of like sphere or something just very outside the box, I'm like, go do it now, because it's probably going to cut through the clutter in terms of, one, it's your creativity and you can show what you can do. And I think people want that. I think so this is going to be an open, a chance to really find people who cut through the noise, mm-hmm, and not being like, okay, let me just try to do something safe. Let me do like, again, let me try to do something like broadcast. It's, mm-hmm, so like, you're like, no, I'm going to go make something freaking weird that, mm-hmm, I love, mm-hmm, and I'm going to submit it to all the places. And hopefully people are like, yo, I fuck with that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the only way. Cause one, at least you'll be happy with it too. At the end of the day, something comes out, you're like, at least it was something I really wanted to do. And it wasn't something I was feeling, trying to like fit myself into like a box, mm-hmm, for, because I think so that's what people, when people start doing that, because you're looking at the commerce, it's like the product itself, as, I mean, I hate looking at it as a product, but it is, mm-hmm, it's not good. Yeah. So I still advise my clients to just think outside the box. I was like, if you want to go create this thing, go do it. I mean, short films, it's like, especially if somebody, this is a moment for you to want, if you want to get into directing, it's like, go shoot a short film, like, facts, get behind the camera. It's like, again, there's so many different budgets you can do with it, but if you can scrounge it, put it together and go shoot something just to say, hey, I was able to continue to be creative. I think that inspires you to know to keep it going, because I think so after a while too, people get very discouraged by it too. They're like, oh, well, I've just been sitting around. I've just been, mm-hmm, sitting around. And the verse is like, let me just go fucking do it. And it probably be no money, but at least when I finish, I have something, mm-hmm, to showcase. And that could lead to the next thing. And I think there is going to be some really unique opportunities coming out of this. I mean, I feel like indie film, as much as distribution has been really shitty for indie film, I think so there's going to be some really cool indie films coming out from the strike. Mm-hmm. I think so some interesting takes, because people at this point, they're like, I'm going to put it in my own hands to create something. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to wait for the studio to give me the money. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go find that person. I'm going to go call that dentist. Mm-hmm. It's always a dentist. I'm going to call that dentist to give me some money to go make this thing or hire me to do this thing. And I think so there's going to be some pretty amazing stuff coming out of that. So I'm hopeful. But I think so it's like, it's taking it into your own hands to have to do that, which sucks because it then makes my job feel like I'm useless. But nah. I'm still out there trying to look for the jobs, guys. I'm still out there.
Now we need you to send that piece of content around.
Yeah, first, but, exactly. So I'll pimp you out still. Yeah.
last thing we like to do is ask three things that you're excited about. One, that's a book. Two is music. And then number three is a movie or television show. So right now, is there a book you're reading that you like, an audio book or anything that you like?
Yeah.
Like, it could be, or it could be a short story, an article. Yeah.
Okay.
An essay? Yeah. The book is, that's a lot to ask.
An essay?
Yeah.
Really?
A comic book.
Like, I'm actually going to look at my phone because I had something on the
beat. And that works, please.
I was like, do I have, I mean, so like this holiday, I have a lot of scripts to read now. Thanks, clients. You guys rule. Give me so many scripts. Where the fuck is my Libby? So there was one. I'm a big Avatar Last Airbender fan. And they have the book of Yang Chin, which is the airbender prior to Avatar Aang. So she has her book that's out. So that was one I've been trying to read for a very long time. It keeps just getting returned to the library because I have not had a chance to. And then another one was my friend actually sent this one to me. It was Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity.
Oh, that's what we want. That's what we're talking about.
And that's a audiobook that I've been meaning to listen to. But when I get in my car, I'm like, I don't want to listen to anyone talk to me. So I'm like, Christmas music, la, 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 la.
and that leading, segueing right into that, what music are you listening to right now?
Mariah Carey.
I did listen to her on the way here because I finally found the Christmas channel on the radio. So I was really happy because it's easy. Yeah. I mean, I've been listening to a lot of lo-fi because I just need it to help concentrate. Yeah. It's just been very busy at work. So using that to help concentrate, get some last minute things done.
Nice.
But like my Spotify end of the year thing was Gavin DeGraw. He's one of my favorite artists. And I knew from the get-go, I was like, this guy's going to be my number one this year. I've been listening to his newest album that he came out last year. Like,
dope.
every other week because it's just very calming. Shout out Gavin DeGraw. If anyone knows him and needs to, like, holla for me.
I got you. Hey, Kevin,
I'm pimping myself out here.
It worked for Meghan Markle. So
seriously.
I got a list, but we'll start with him first. So I guess I would say maybe him for music or my lo-fi, just because those are the most recent outside of Christmas music.
Yeah. What about a TV show or a movie? It could be one or the other that you like.
That I like. I have not watched the second season yet, but Invincible.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The first one was crazy.
Yeah, I've been waiting honestly for all the episodes to come out. Not to binge, but I like watching an episode every night.
Yeah.
So it's like, is that one thing I get
in
to look
forward to?
Yeah. Versus like, I know some people are like, you want to binge? I was like, no, I don't need to watch like 10 episodes a night. I was like, I just like to come home knowing I just have this thing to look forward to.
It's a safety.
Right. Yeah. So Invincible. I also just rewatched Squid Games, which I fucking love that show.
Wait, the reality show or no?
I heard the reality show is hella good though.
Is it?
Am I right or what?
I have heard that it is a good watch. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought about watching it because I do like game shows, but I was like, I just rewatched the show.
Yeah.
An aired show. And I was just like, because I thought it was just
It was.
It's just really well made. And I think it's just, my roommate had never seen it. So I was like, we're going to watch this. And of course, like, I knew it was coming and I'm like watching him.
Like, wait, just wait.
It's like, what do you think about that one? And at the end of it, I'm like, who was it? They're like, I'm like eager to watch the next episode. Yeah. He's like, okay, let's go to bed. And I was like, what
about that game?
And he just walks into his room and I'm like sitting there by myself. I'm like, I kind of want to watch another episode. But I was like, I've already seen this. So it's like, you have to wait for him. And so I would say those.
Perfect.
I'm trying to think of movies. By the way, Hunger Games. I don't know if you guys seen the newest Hunger Games.
I heard it was.
It's really good.
I heard it was good. Yeah, somebody told me it was good.
I really liked it.
I liked the first one for sure.
Yeah, it was. So. And this one was like, in terms of even like how it looks, was beautiful versus like some of that what Francis tried to do in some old ones. It was like a little weird, but this one is like really pretty.
All right, well, look, thank you very much. This is another great informative episode. These are the episodes that our fans clamor for.
That's right.
Because they all want to get signed by you. So these are
we out there.
Yeah, out these streets.
Yeah. Be patient with us.
Yeah.
We out here. We try to do our best.
Mel, do you want to tell them what they can do with our podcast? The lovely rating or comment?
Yes, I will. I'll let the people know what they can do. Okay. They can rate us 5 stars on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. They can subscribe to us. They can share us with a friend. Please share us with an enemy, you know? Costs you nothing.
Free 99.
Yeah. Free 99. And you can write us a glowing review.
Yes, please. We love reviews.
We love them.
And so how can people get in contact with you? Is there anything? Do you have a Twitter? Do you do any of that type of stuff?
So I did just get Instagram in July. So that was the one thing I did during the strike.
Oh, nice.
Public or private?
It's public.
Oh,
so the people can follow you.
So you guys can follow me. You can find me.
Yes.
Wow. It's great because I just watch tennis videos all day.
Nice.
Shout out to Ben Shelton, big fan of his too. If anyone want to holla for him, out here pimping myself right now. Mm-hmm. Tis the season.
What's your handle?
It's just Haley Mariner.
Oh,
there's no one out there with that handle. So
nobody.
Like,
hey. That's fine. It was there. You didn't have to bargain for it. That's fine. No.
It's great. So you can find me on Instagram
for sure. Wow. Well, look, another good episode.
Another amazing episode.
Yes. Two Writers.
Talking Shit.
Till next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Two Writers Talking Shit is an original podcast created by Melanie Mars and Saeed Crumpler. Our producer is Kayla Guest. Our audio engineer is T. Kelly.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you damn well please. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and give us a glowing review.
If you're not going to give us 5 stars or any glowing reviews, then why even log on? Save your rants for an open mic.
If you have any questions for us, and I do mean any, you can email us at twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com. That's the number 2, and then writerstalkingshit@gmail.com.
See you next episode.
Bye.